Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and most, Brandon Perkins. Joining you as always is Chris Loci. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah. This episode is going to be for July 22nd, 2022. Second to last of the shows for this month until we are in August, and hopefully heading headlong towards the end of summer, because I'm pretty much sick of this shit at this point. And I know for a fact that the people over in the UK are definitely sick of it, and we'll definitely be talking about that. But yeah, this week, we more or less found out just how fucking incompetent some of the malefactors in our institutions really are. We got a more complete report of all the shit that went down during the Uvalde massacre on the part of the Keystone cop assholes who were supposed to be the ones to save the kids, and we find out, oh, it was just a complete fucking shit show from start to finish. We also found out that we found out some more stuff because the January 6th committee held their last scheduled hearing this week. That I said that last scheduled, it's not the last period. They're going to be reconvening in September. And we found out that a certain somebody turned out to be a fucking coward. Yeah, that you, if you've seen the memes, you know exactly who it is we're talking about. We also have some kind of distressing science news. We'll tell you about it. It's maybe kind of sort of related to climate change. It might not be. We'll get to that. We also got a bunch of new trailers and stuff. Of course, the San Diego Comic-Con went down this week, and I think it's still going on. And we got a bunch of new stuff out of that. We'll be getting to all that. But before we get to that and the rest of the show, let's start off as we always do, talking a little bit about all the things we've done that have led up to this point in the week. So, Chris, get us started. What have you been doing this week?
For the most part, I've been busy with work this week, so haven't had a ton of time for a lot of the stuff I would have liked to have gotten to this week. But, I've been able to watch some stuff here, finished up Ms. Marvel, which is really good. Really ends in a great way that sets up, for the Marvels, which is the next Captain Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
Sorts, it finds a way to tie into that, and that's not a spoiler, because that's been known for a while that this will lead into that kind of thing. So that'll be interesting to see. And, yeah, kind of probably one of the best of the Marvel Disney Plus shows.
Mm-hmm.
Up there with probably WandaVision.
Mm-hmm.
For stuff that does some really cool things and adds to the universe in some fun ways. So, yeah, there's that. I've been continuing to watch One Piece as I have finished up the arc where Sanji joins the crew. Dealing with Krieger, the supposed strongest man who just gets the shit beat out of him.
Mm.
And dealing with another character that's even more powerful than him. What's his name? Hawkeye Mihawk, which I think the Japanese name is better. It's like Dracula Mihawk, because he looks like a Dracula man. That is good at swords for that. So that character comes in and Zoro just goes wild because he's like, oh, this is the man I've been chasing. I'm going to have to fuck his shit up. And he just gets destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Destroyed so easily as, his skills aren't nearly as good as the dude that's been to the Grand Line and has sunk many ships just with his own swords.
Mm-hmm.
That's been fun as we get to the next arc there. And they've added three more seasons to the Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, they say 11 to 13. I don't know what the specific names are, but looking forward to get there eventually. But yeah, let's see. Also been watching Westworld because there's a new season out for that. And that I'm starting from the beginning because I've only watched the first season years ago. So that is, I basically just finished the first season and started the second. And so, yeah, that's a Michael Crichton book that it's based on, which means it's based on a futuristic theme park that goes horribly awry.
Well, okay, so actually, no, it's not a Crichton movie, a Crichton book. It's actually a Crichton movie.
Okay.
Yeah, he actually, so, it's one of a couple of movies that he actually directed back in the day.
Yeah, still similar themes to Jurassic Park, though. Jurassic Park, there's actually more responsibility shown there because they haven't actually launched it yet. They're sort of getting ready to launch and need, you know, people to convince their board that it's okay to go ahead. Whereas here, this is, you know, decades after the park has launched and sorts of stuff like that. But, you know, things they're doing with the host have apparently created means for them to remember things from their past versions or builds or whatever they call it. That leads to some of them kind of waking up to the reality of what their existence is and the means for them to, you know, escape or cause chaos or whatever ends up happening. And yeah, season two kind of, so it's an interesting place in the aftermath of that. So I'm curious to see more of that and where that goes. But yeah, that's kind of a wild show.
Oh yeah. It's actually really good.
Yeah.
And actually kind of disturbing too, as you will see.
Yeah. There's lots of talk of, you know, you can do anything. You know, which features, you know, people raping women. Lots of violence. One dude in particular is, you know, cutting scalps off of the other dudes.
Yeah, the man in the black hat. Because he's convinced that there's like a deeper layer to the game, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, lots of weird stuff going on. But yeah, that's been somewhat dealt with in the first season. Let's see how things go with the second season, which I believe, from what I recall, people don't like this season. So we'll have to see how that goes. I guess supposedly picks up with the third season, but yeah, that's been that. And for games, been playing more Power Wash Simulator, kind of burning through things on the Steam version, where I have just done a private jet that for whatever reason has a big laser on it. You know, not for any nefarious purposes, obviously. But I think the next job I started is a boat that this one character that I've worked with a few times has, you know, invited me back to wash up for them. So that's fun. But yeah, kind of continuing on with that as I work towards the new maps that have been added with the 1.0 update, but still have a ways to go for that. So yeah. And let's see, also been playing more Rocket League as just continuing on with the season. Enjoying that a lot. So that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
Well, I started playing Escape Academy on, you know, your recommendation. And yeah, it is a good game. It's very fun. But man, the control is that the way they map them is shit. I had to do a lot of tinkering in the, you know, the adjustments for the controls to get it to the type of reaction time that I needed. Because otherwise, it's either like not sensitive enough or it's too sensitive. And considering there are parts in this game where there's like, you know, where you need to like press buttons and stuff and like very particular times. Yeah, it can be a little annoying. But I have basically gotten past the first four or first five escape rooms. that I've done. Let's see. Yeah, I think it's the first five. And I think I got into the winter period. Yeah, that game is actually really good, and the escape rooms are actually really, they're legitimately well-designed, although I will admit, so far, the escape rooms I've encountered are not terribly complicated, to be honest.
Yeah, there's maybe a couple of puzzles I was like, oh, that's how that works. Like the vases with the weird eyebrows stuff and the artsy...
Yeah.
That one was like, oh, I see what the puzzle is here. Because I was like, wait, how do all these different statues work into this puzzle?
Yeah.
And that was actually it for the most part.
And then there was just trying to figure out, like, the one where, you know, she goes on a mission and you're having to work dispatch and just kind of trying to figure out how all the various moving parts work rather than the actual thing itself, which wasn't really terribly difficult on its own. So I've also been playing that, and I am still playing Power Wash Simulator. I have finished... I'm currently on the fire station.
Okay. That one's probably the biggest one you've done so far.
Yeah. I've done, I've done the bungalow, and I've done the old house. I've done the cottage where a dude that definitely robbed a bank or something was hanging out at.
And there's Old Mother Hubbard's shoe house.
Yeah, which probably was one of the most difficult because of just all the nooks and crannies that are in that particular thing.
Like around the shoelaces and the...
Oh, yeah.
The tongue. The weirdest places to get into.
Yeah. And I also did the old antique car, and that one wasn't difficult, it was just tedious, because you have to deal with all the rust on it, and...
Yeah, you can buy the soap for it, the soap dispenser, and that'll cut through it faster, but that also costs money.
Yeah. Let's see, I think it was the golf cart, and the dirt bike... And I also did the playground. That was like, I think the third or fourth one that I did.
They improved that one by adding more sections to complete.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that entire like weird rubber foam ground part was just one solid thing.
Yeah.
Instead of just, oh, here's the different colors. Just clear those out and those will be each separate things.
Mm-hmm. And, it's one of those things where it's like, it's fun to play. The one sort of thing that does irritate me, the fact is that when you get it down to the point where it's like just a sliver of progress left on whatever section you're doing, it's generally not really communicated very well, like what parts you need to get. Like, obviously, you know, you can press one of the buttons and it'll show you what the dirt is, and you know, that'll work.
Do you want a trick that might help with that?
What's that?
If you go to the pause menu, the itemized list of everything, mm-hmm. you click on one of the items, it will highlight the entire item.
Yeah.
The entire spot. So if you're unsure, like, what all counts as this thing?
Yeah.
That can help you, as well as if it's like, you know, you got 2 of 16 of these things. You're like, which 2 are the ones I missed? You know, that can also highlight that stuff.
Yeah. But once again, I cannot emphasize how this is absolutely one of those games where you really do not need to think very hard about anything. You can just shut your mind off and just enjoy, you know, the feeling of completing something slowly but surely. Also, don't use the white extension. The white extension is fucking useless.
Oh, the white nozzle?
Yeah.
I think I only use it when I'm just like, I don't care about being super precise. I have a mouse, so I can just sweep it back and forth. I get more out of it than you would on a controller.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, there's this big, huge area. Let me just sweep this across. But I usually, because if you've noticed with the longer extensions,
mm-hmm.
like those spreads on those things are shortened.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's like the one I can go to like that or the green one whenever I'm like, I just need it to be a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I don't have it written down, but I've also am still playing The Evil Within. I just haven't played it very much this week. But one of the puzzles I had to do in that game was trying to insert a probe into a certain part of a person's brain, and there's like an audio tape that tells you it's like, okay, we're, you know, study whatsoever, inserting into, you know, fear center of the brain, and there's like a diagram next to you that maps out the various parts, and it's like, okay, this is where it is, and so you have to push like a needle into it. It is very gruesome. But other than that, that's pretty much more or less been it as far as gaming is concerned. Books, I have been reading Stephen King's Mr. Mercedes, which, unlike most of his other books, is just like a straight up like crime thriller. It's basically about this guy who's like an old retired detective who decides to get back in the game after a guy decides to basically steal this woman's Mercedes and then drive it over to like where there's a job fair and just plow it into like a bunch of people. And the thing is, it's not a question of finding out who the guy is, because the book, even like the insert flaps on the end, you know, that tell you what the book is about, just right up tells you. It's this guy who, among other things, drives an ice cream truck. And he's like part of the story. You get into his mind, it's like, wow, this is like 100% one of those incel assholes that you would, you know, that would totally do something like this. But it's damn good. And music, nothing much there. You know, I've just still learning my new stuff on guitar, you know, getting my calluses and everything. But that's pretty much about it. You got anything you want to add before we move on, Chris?
No.
All right. Well, then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And one of those things that I love about the English language is that we can take the concept of just anything that is so basic and stupid, and we can give it, like, really just overly fancy names that tends to hide just how petty and stupid it actually is. Like, for example, a filibuster. Now, there's actually two meanings for a filibuster. The original filibuster was just a guy who would go into, like, another territory that was, like, controlled by someone else and then say, hey, this is my territory now. That was the original filibuster. These days, especially in the U.S., when we talk about filibuster, it's when a guy goes up before Congress and basically tries to keep talking nonstop until he just wears out the rest of them. They decide to just not vote on something. It hasn't worked very often. A lot of times these days, it's mostly just a political stunt. But that is what it is. Now, here's a word I'm going to use, Chris, and I want to ask you if you know what this means. If you do know what it means, don't describe it, because, you'll completely fucking undercut my shit here, but have you ever heard the phrase defenestration?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know what the word defenestration means? And if you do, don't say it out loud, but just yes or no.
Probably know the gist of it. I don't know if I know the exact definition.
Okay. So let me take you back in time here. Way back in the 16th and 17th centuries. In Prague. Now, Prague, of course, is in what we now call modern-day Hungary. And the thing about Prague... No, wait, that's not Prague. Prague is in... it's in the Czech Republic, sorry. There's been, like, a couple of different places that are called Prague. This one took place in what we now call in Bohemia. And this is in the Czech Republic, but it has to do with some religion stuff. So before what we call the Reformation, the Protestant Reformation that started by Martin Luther had started, there had been some things that had sort of popped up before then that we would call proto-Protestant. One of these were the Hussites, who were inspired by a guy named Jan Hus, who was a preacher who basically was more or less, he was preaching this, talking about, okay, so all this stuff that the mainstream Catholic Church is talking about, it's kind of silly and it's kind of extraneous and it's not really that important. You know, all this obsession with like the menial pieces of orthodoxy, frankly, you know, you can be a Christian and not necessarily be a part or necessarily, you know, be a part of any specific body. Now he still considered himself very much a Catholic, but he was not necessarily so much to the point that he would end up willfully cutting himself off like Martin Luther did. As you can imagine, the Catholic Church hated this shit, and it basically resulted in him getting burned at the stake and all of his followers being exiled. It would eventually lead to what's called the Hussite Wars. Now, after the Hussite Wars, which was a thing that actually happened in what we today call what was back then called the Holy Roman Empire, which was, as Voltaire famously said, was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire. This thing called the Peace of Augsburg had been brought about, which allowed a prince to determine the religion of his subjects. And that was basically what much of the Holy Roman Empire was ruled by outside of the actual emperor. It was the princes with the Habsburg kings at the top of them, and then the Holy Roman Emperor at the cap at the very top. There was also talk of what was then called the Counter-Reformation. By this point, Martin Luther's Reformation had more or less kick-started in honest earnesty, and the Catholics were trying to create what they call the Counter-Reformation, which, despite how it sounds, was actually more of an attempt by the Catholic Church to clean house. While at the same time sort of putting forth the still their belief that the Catholic Church is the true church, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so that's the set the scene. Then we go to Prague. In 1609, the Holy Roman Emperor Rudolf II increased rights for Protestants. He was in turn considered to be unfit to govern, and other members of his family declared his younger brother Matthias to be family head in 1606. So Matthias began to gradually wrest territory from his brother, and he eventually succeeded him as the ruler of Bohemia. And he extended his offer of more legal and religious concessions to Bohemia, relying mostly on the advice of his chancellor. As you can imagine, this was going to cause some conflict. So Matthias was old, he didn't really have any kids, and he made his cousin Ferdinand his heir, and had him elected the king in 1617. He was a proponent of the Catholic Counter-Reformation, and was not likely to be well-disposed to Protestantism or the religious freedoms that Bohemians had decided to embrace at this point. So the Protestants opposed his government, which they interpreted the letter of majesty to extend not only to the land controlled by the nobility of self-governing towns, but also to the king's own lands. Yada, yada, yada. There's conflict. The Bohemian estates protested against an order from Ferdinand, which had forced the emperor to order the cessation of construction of some Protestant chapels on royal land. And so that's the stage set. And this is how we find out what a defenestration is. All that shit wasn't the defenestration. This is. So, on 23rd of May, 1618, four local regents who were Catholic, Count Yaroslav Borita Martinice, Wilhelm Slobodka of Klum, Adam II von Sternberg, who was Supreme Burgrave, and Matthew Leopold Popel Blobkowitz, who was the Grand Prior, arrived at the Bohemian Chancellor at 8:30 in the morning. After they prepared the meeting hall, members of the dissolved assembly of the three main Protestant estates then gathered there at 9, led by a count named Thurn, who had been deprived of his post as Burgrave of one of the emperor's castles. Protestants' Lord's agenda was to clarify whether the four regents present were responsible for persuading the emperor to order the cessation of the Protestant church construction on royal lands. Civically, they were like, oh, they wanted to go. It's like, okay, were you the motherfuckers who went up to the emperor and told him to stop building these churches that we wanted? They read aloud a letter wherein Lord Paul Razakin read aloud a letter with the following approximate content. His Imperial Majesty had sent to their graces the Lord Regents a sharp letter that was by our request issued to us as a copy after the original had been read aloud, and in which His Majesty declared all of our lives and honor already forfeit, thereby greatly frightening all three Protestant states, as they also absolutely intended to proceed with the execution against us. We came to a unanimous agreement among ourselves that, regardless of any life of loss of life and limb, honor and property, we would stand firm with all for one and one for all, nor would we be subservient, but rather we would loyally help and protect each other to the utmost against all difficulties. Because, however, it is clear that such a letter came about through the advice of some of our religious enemies, we wish to know and hereby ask the Lord Regents present if all or some of them knew of the letter, recommended of it, and or approved of it. And so, this is when the defenestration begins. Before the regents gave any answer, they requested that the Protestants give them the opportunity to confer with their superior, who was not present. If they were given the opportunity, the Protestants were to receive an official answer to their grievance by the next Friday. The Protestant lords, however, demanded an immediate answer. Two regents were declared innocent by the Protestant estate holders, deemed to be too pious to have any responsibility in the preparation of the emperor's letter. They were removed from the room before leaving. Adam Sternberg made it clear that they did not advise anything that was contrary to the letter of their majesty. This left Count Fleet Slatim of Chum and Count Yaroslav Orta of Martinice, who had replaced them as Castellan, both known Catholic hardliners, and Philip Fabricius, the secretary to the regents. They eventually acknowledged responsibility for the letter and, presuming they would only be arrested, welcomed any punishment the Protestants had planned. And what they had planned was that they grabbed those three fuckers and threw them out of a top floor window. That is what a defenestration is. It's a fancy word for taking somebody and throwing them the fuck out of a window. So, exactly what happened to the men after they were thrown out? They survived. Somehow survived a 70-foot fall from the third floor. Catholics would maintain the men were saved by angels or by intercession of the Virgin Mary who caught them, whereas Protestant pamphleteers asserted that they survived due to falling onto a dung heap. A story unknown to contemporaries and probably coined in response to divine intervention claims. Philip Fabricius was later ennobled by the emperor and granted the title Baron von Hohenhall, Baron of Highfall. So yeah, that's what a defenestration is. It's a very fancy word for just taking somebody and throwing them out of a high window. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Rant of Factoid. Goddamn. Okay, so with that out of the way, we have once again to start, as always, the show proper. We have the assholes of the week. And our first major assholes of the week are the 400 or so officers that were rushed to the scene of the Uvalde shooting but didn't do jack shit because of systemic failures that created the chaotic scene. And we've all seen the footage, so...
Yeah. Yeah, this report said there were about 376 law enforcement officers at the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, chaotic and uncoordinated. The group of federal, state, and local officials lacked any clear leadership, basic communication, and enough urgency to take down the gunman. And there was a good article out there that pointed out, hey, this is more than there were at the Alamo, defending the Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case you needed a historical reference there.
Which was also famously a bit of a clusterfuck, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, heads are going to, yeah, not great news, and I mean, don't get me wrong, the Uvalde police were already looking pretty awful by this point, but yeah.
It was above their heads that failed everybody there.
Yeah. My advice would be to just to fire the whole goddamn police department and replace every single person there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that would be the honorable thing to do. But, you know, these are cops, so... Yeah, a bunch of fuckers are going to need to resign. And I think this pretty much puts that whole good guy with a gun thing pretty much dead. There were 400 people here, 400 supposed good guys with guns, and they didn't do jack shit. It was a fucking immigration officer that ended up killing the guy in the end. Like, what the fuck, dude? But, yeah, so, fuck those guys. Now we got something else, and this whole other story is just fucking bizarre. The National Archives are looking into the Secret Service's having potentially unauthorized deletion of U.S. Secret Service texts from January 5th and 6th, 2021. This is, of course, having to do with all the stuff that went down in January 6th. It looks like the Secret Service may have tampered with it. They ended up only being able to deliver one lone text message to the committee, and they've basically been spending the last couple of days combing through metadata, or at least that's what they claim they're doing.
Yeah, it seems clearly there is somebody that has been doing a lot of work to wipe this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like they're complicit in some way, because there would be no reason to go to this, you know, length to hide this stuff. If the National Archives and Records Administration was... You know, the ones saying, like, yeah, unfortunately, we don't seem to have this. Let's see. They say if the department determines any messages were improperly deleted, then Homeland Security must send the National Archives a report describing the messages as well as why they were deleted, how the agency attempted to salvage them.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the Inspector General for the Department of Homeland Security, who's looking into the Capitol insurrection, has notified Congress that after requesting records of text for the day before, and the day after the attack, he learned that many of these texts were erased as part of a device replacement program.
Mm-hmm.
That's raised serious questions of whether the Secret Service, which protects the president, has destroyed federal records, or the Department of Homeland Security obstructed oversight.
Mm.
And yeah, the chief of communications for the Secret Service has disputed this account.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it makes them look like a bunch of assholes, doesn't it?
Yeah. And yes, let's see, he said that the National Archives, quote, will have our full cooperation in this review, and we will complete the internal review of our information as directed and promptly respond to their inquiry. He also said the Secret Service has handed over thousands of pages of documents to the January 6th committee in response to a subpoena the panel issued Friday, but it was not able to fully comply with it. Saying they are exhausting all options.
Hmm.
He said that while it is conducting a forensic analysis on devices that with erased text messages, it is likely the agency will not be able to recover them.
Hmm.
It's like, yeah, these should not have been erased in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that was done by the agents themselves that had the phones, or the people that they were turned into.
Mm-hmm.
There's something going on here.
Oh, yeah. Almost definitely. Somebody is trying to cover something up. But they are combing through the metadata, and maybe they'll find something there. And finally, our last asshole of the week, Steve Bannon, was officially found guilty on both contempt of Congress charges. He faces a minimum of 30 days in jail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, put on no defense in this case.
Yeah.
Which featured testimony from just two government witnesses, including the deputy staff director of the House Select Committee investigating the events of January 6, 2021. Mm. The Justice Department told jurors the case was black and white, simple as the words on the subpoena to Bannon last autumn.
Mm.
And he broadcast his defiance on the social media site Getter.
Mm-hmm.
Posting that he told lawmakers he would not comply. October 8th, 2021, after the first committee deadline had passed. And yeah, so that, let's see here, like the potential is up to like 2 years for this. Peter Navarro is scheduled to go on trial in November on contempt charges as well.
Yep.
To throw the book at this guy. This is...
Yeah.
Set an example for why nobody else should be treating subpoenas from Congress like a joke.
Yeah, so lightly, really. But yes. And as for our one hero of the week, because we have all that awful shit, we do have this good, at least one good thing to talk about. The Marines are set to have their very first black four-star general in the 246-year history of that institution.
Yep. Lieutenant General Michael Langley has the chance of reaching one of the highest ranks in the military.
Mm-hmm.
He's facing a confirmation hearing before the Senate Armed Services Committee on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Or he has on Thursday, confirmed by the Senate. He'll become the first black four-star general in the Marines' 246-year history.
Yep.
And he will lead all U.S. military forces in Africa as chief of U.S. Africa Command. He's a native of Shreveport, Louisiana, son of a former non-commissioned officer in the Air Force. He has commanded every level, been in Afghanistan during the war and various posts in Asia and Europe.
Mm-hmm.
He assumed command of U.S. Marine Corps Forces Europe and Africa last year.
Yeah.
After his predecessor was removed amid allegations of using a racial slur for African-Americans in front of troops.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a hell of a follow-up there.
Yeah.
He holds multiple advanced degrees, including Master's in National Security Strategic Studies from the U.S. Naval War College and Strategic Studies from the U.S. Army War College. And yeah, as of last year, he was one of only six black generals in the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be a big... big deal.
Yeah.
Especially because the armed forces were only desegregated in 1948.
Mm.
So 74 years later.
Yeah.
They have their first black four-star general.
Mm-hmm. Bam. But, yeah. So, that moves us on from the show proper now to the proper show proper. And we start off with the story that President Biden sadly announced this week that he tested positive for COVID-19. Now, the good news is he's double vaxxed and double boosted. So, you know, he's pretty much got the best protection that you can get right now.
Yeah.
Said he's more or less feeling fine. He's just having some mild symptoms. But, yeah, so...
taking Paxlovid.
Mm-hmm.
To isolate the White House and continue to carry out all of his duties fully during that time. I've been in contact with members of the White House staff by phone. Mm. Participate in his planned meetings at the White House via phone and Zoom from the residence.
Mm.
So yeah, that was not great news, but it seems like he'll be fine.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, he'll be fine. That's good. All right. And now, for some vaccination news, this week the CDC endorsed Novavax, the very first protein vaccine in the United States against COVID-19.
Yeah.
So it's not an RNA vaccine, it's a protein vaccine.
Yeah, sort of a traditional style vaccine.
Which means now you don't have any fucking excuse. So
yep.
They will still try to come up with one.
Yeah, the CDC director said here in a statement, if you have been waiting for a COVID-19 vaccine built on a different technology than those previously available, now is the time to join the millions of Americans who have been vaccinated. Mm. Yeah, most Americans have gotten at least their primary COVID-19 vaccinations by now. But CDC officials said between 26 and 37 million adults haven't had a single dose.
Mm-hmm.
Population at Novavax for now will be targeting.
Mm.
And yeah, it's unclear how many will be persuaded by a more conventional option. But yeah, that's the big deal there.
Yeah. And now for another story caused by anti-vaxxers, because this is 100% the reason why this shit is here. Ladies and gentlemen, get ready for a real throwback, because guess what's back in the United States? Fucking polio.
Yeah.
God fucking damn it.
Yep. Found in New York.
Yeah.
The first case in the United States since 2013.
Yep.
You see what happens when we can properly vaccinate people?
Yeah.
And keep this from being an issue?
Yeah. Now, see, I'll be fine because I was actually vaccinated against polio years ago.
I think we all were as kids.
I
don't know if it's still in the round of vaccinations kids get.
I'm pretty sure it's a requirement.
Yeah. So, you have at least that for, I don't know if there's a limit to how long it works.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it's mostly to work during the most vulnerable years.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is... And nearly 93% of children have been vaccinated against polio by the age of 2.
Mm-hmm.
Many states require a polio vaccine to attend school. However, some people are granted religious exemptions, and a handful of states leave that decision to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious what states those are.
Gee, I fucking wonder.
Let's see. The unvaccinated individual from Rockland County likely contracted the virus from someone outside of the country. They've taken an oral polio vaccine, which hasn't been authorized for use in the U.S. since 2000.
Yeah.
No further details released just yet. The oral vaccine contains weakened live strains of the virus. Over time, the weaker strain of polio can mutate and behave more like a natural version of the virus and spread to unvaccinated people. This is defined as a vaccine-derived poliovirus case.
Mm-hmm.
Had the individual in New York been vaccinated, Yulberg said this wouldn't have happened. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And they're urging other people to get the vaccine if they have not done so.
Mm-hmm.
And announce clinics to make it easy for local residents to do so.
Seriously. Like, have you seen the footage of all of the fucking mothers bringing their children to the doctor to get vaccinated against polio when the vaccine came out? Like, it was around the fucking block. Because polio is no fucking joke. It is not just like a regular flu. It slowly robs you of every feeling and movement in your body.
Yeah, the person they're talking to here was infected with polio in 1950 when she was just 4 years old, mm-hmm. 5 years before a vaccine was available in the U.S., She was hospitalized for 6 months, said her left leg was paralyzed, and she required a leg brace and crutches to get around for a portion of her childhood.
Yeah.
By the time she was in high school, she no longer needed the brace or crutches because the surviving nerves made up for the ones damaged by the virus. But 35 years later, her condition began to deteriorate. About half of all polio survivors experienced some level of paralysis later in life.
Mm-hmm.
There's no definitive answer as to why that happens. The leading theory is that the surviving nerves wear down over time.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So you do not want that.
No. No, you do not.
There's a reason why we vaccinate babies.
Mm-hmm.
So they do not have to worry about that. We do not need to bring it back because people have forgotten how bad this is.
Yes, exactly. It's not fun. But, so... And now for the other big story of this week, which is that the January 6th committee held its last scheduled hearing this week. Like I said, last scheduled. They're going to be reconvening in September. But they finally sort of put the last nail in the coffin they were comfortable putting in before they adjourned for the next month or so. So there were a bunch of things we found out. And Chris, tell us some of the things we learned.
They showed a bunch of people that were testifying that they, urged Trump to make a statement or put out a tweet to tell the crowd to go home. And obviously he declined to do so for, I think it was 186 minutes, they said.
Yeah.
Something around there, about 3 hours. That could have saved people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when he finally did, when it happened to be clear that the insurrection would fail, he empathized with them. That was the last straw for Sarah Matthews, a former deputy press secretary who testified Thursday. He didn't distinguish between those who peacefully attended his speech and those who he watched cause violence. Mm. As a spokesperson, I knew I would be asked to defend that. His refusal to act and call off the mob that day, his refusal to condemn the violence, was indefensible. And so she resigned that night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, they showed more stuff in that vein. Had a few other witnesses. But yeah, the big highlights centered around one Senator Josh Hawley.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, has one of the most famous pictures before the whole thing happened, where he's walking by the people, the crowd, and putting his fist up in the air to encourage them. And
yeah, about that.
Yeah, later on, as, you know, things were going down, he managed to see what was going on and fled. Just ran,
put his tail between his legs, and ran like the little bitch boy he is.
Yeah. Yeah, let me see here.
Pretty much created the memes for all of today.
Yeah. And now there's a lot of senators posting pictures of them like, we didn't run.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Senator Hawley?
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of showing like, oh, he fucked around and he found out.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the thing you also have to remember about Josh Hawley, he is terrible. And I don't just mean the fact that he's an awful human being. That's, you know, that's already self-demonstratable. It's the fact that he's terrible at trying to do all the Trump stuff. You know, he tried to exude that bravado and that sort of just complete, like, he does not give a fuck what anybody says or thinks, and he completely fails at it. Like, just fucking miserably.
Yeah, in a very smart move, he showed up tonight at a rally.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, he said he had a message for liberals about January 6th, saying, I do not regret it, I am not backing down, I'm not going to apologize, I'm not going to cower, I'm not going to run from you. I'm not going to bend the knee.
You already did, brother. And we got you on tape.
Yep.
But,
People have put that little clip there to money songs, including Running Up That Hill from Stranger Things. And
yep.
Yakety Sax and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think the Colbert, Late Show with Stephen Colbert put it to the you know, Flintstones running in place sound, the bubba bubba da bubba da bubba da, you know. So that was more or less that final hearing. They adjourned until September, and in the meantime, they're just going to let the right wing just sort of stew in all that bullshit. There's already, like, some Democratic groups are, getting ready to found what they call the Hawley 5K charity run. It was just a fitting end to it. So that part of American history is closed until, you know, September, and we will be talking about that when it starts to open up again. Now, Moving on to some other political news. So after the Supreme Court basically overturned Roe v. Wade, some of the opinions that were put forth seemed to suggest that they were thinking of reconsidering the legality of some other cases, one of them being Obergefell, which, of course, is the one that legalized same-sex marriage throughout the United States. Now, and then it was then got sort of pushed forward more when fucking Ted Cruz, of all people, started talking about, like, we need to revisit and overturn that decision, all this bullshit, because he's Ted Cruz and he's an amoral little slug of a human being. And so now the Democrats have decided, you know what, it might be a good idea to get sort of, if we sort of try to nip this shit in the bud while we can, and and sort of basically encode the right to same-sex marriage under law. So what the House did this week is they overwhelmingly passed a bill to protect same-sex and interracial marriage. That, of course, they did that. It was, I think it was all the Democrats and 47 different Republican representatives voted in favor of it.
Yeah, 157 voted against it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is pretty good for the general way this stuff goes.
Yeah. I think after, you know, it was made legal, it was pretty obvious. Look, the sky didn't fall. You know, nothing bad happened. Everything just went as normal.
And politicians want as many votes as possible.
Yeah. And overall, most people are, the majority of Americans are now completely okay with it because it's just now the norm. It's not, you know, it's there's like a whole generation now that have lived at a time when same-sex marriage was legal in the United States. It's not that big of a deal. So they did this, and now it's to the Senate, and the weird part is, in spite of what you might think, it actually has a really good chance of passing the Senate, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, there have been a few that are obviously not going to.
Yeah, the obvious ones.
Yeah, Marco Rubio went out there being like, there's no reason to waste our time with this.
Yeah.
Which is like, yes, there is, because you have your fellow senators saying, yeah, we need to get rid of this.
Yeah, they say, yeah. And you had freaking Ron Johnson, of all people, saying, I really don't see any reason to oppose it.
Yeah. Like Josh Hawley here is, I'm probably not inclined to support it.
Yeah.
The predicate of this is just wrong. I don't think the Supreme Court is going to overturn any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Which is like, they've said specifically that they very well will go after that if they get something up to their level.
Mm-hmm. Again, like I said, Josh Hawley is terrible. So
yeah. There's Senator John Thune of South Dakota saying, I don't see anything behind this right now other than, you know, election year politics.
Yeah, because politicians are political.
Yeah. And yeah, Chuck Schumer here saying the MAGA radicals that are taking over the Republican Party have made it abundantly clear they're not satisfied with repealing Roe.
Mm-hmm.
You pointed the comments from Senator Ted Cruz, who said over the weekend that the Supreme Court's decision protecting marriage equality was clearly wrong. Mm-hmm. State legislators should visit the issue.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, it's... You notice when mentioning Obergefell, Clarence Thomas did not mention the one for interracial marriage.
Loving v. Virginia.
Yeah, which is like, yeah.
Gee, I wonder why.
Because he and his traitorous wife are interracial.
Yeah. That's why they actually put the interracial part into this bill, because, you know, they've left that fucking door open. So might as well shut it and lock it tight while you still can.
Yeah, you might not want that to happen, but he could be on the other end of a 5-4 vote.
Yeah.
On that. So, yeah, this is a big deal. So let's, you know, take the lesson from Roe v. Wade and actually codify these other important things into law.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's definitely others for, you know, contraception and all that kind of stuff. Of course, Republicans are very much against that stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. And speaking of stuff that was surprisingly bipartisan, a bipartisan group of senators announced a deal on reforming the Electoral Count Act.
Yeah. Which is headed up by Joe Manchin and Susan Collins. So you like to think that Joe Manchin isn't going to turn around and be like, yeah, no deal. But wouldn't surprise me. But yeah, they have 16 co-sponsors, including 9 Republicans. And yeah, Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell has signaled he's open to updating the old law.
Mm.
Yeah, this is a law from 1887. And had a number of points that Trump was targeting to potentially overturn the election.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, nobody went for it to the degree that to actually try to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, this would enact a few measures aimed at ensuring that Congress can identify a single conclusive slate of electors from each state,
mm-hmm.
not have the idea of, you know, a secondary group, shadow yeah. electors, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
It also raised the threshold of challenging mm-hmm. the electors, which was originally one member of the House, mm-hmm. one member of the Senate, to yep. 25% or 20% of the members of each chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, let's see. The measure would strike a provision of an archaic 1845 law that could be used by state legislatures to override the popular vote in their state by declaring a failed election. A term that is not defined in law. I would also reaffirm that the constitutional role of the vice president as the presiding officer of the joint meeting of Congress is solely ministerial.
Mm.
And so, yeah, that's a lot of stuff that has been needed. Of course, I know people are like, oh, just get rid of the electoral count. That's a way bigger thing than is going to happen anytime soon, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to do what you can to plug in the holes
yeah.
that are here for deranged people like Trump and the GOP
mm-hmm.
That would like to you know, exploit if they can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, moving on there from out of the U.S. to world news. More or less due to climate change, the United Kingdom has been dealing with a very intense heat wave this past week.
There's one more here.
Well, actually, there's one more. Before we get there, we got one more political story before we go to that story. Both Senate Dems and Republicans are working on a reformed immigration bill relating to farm work. Yeah, go ahead and explain this one.
Yeah, this one's called the Farm Workforce Modernization Act.
Mm-hmm.
Focused mainly on updating the food production workforce, a system some call outdated and that has led to higher food prices, especially for dairy, meat, and vegetables. I would do this by allowing more farmers like dairy and pork producers to hire temporary workers year-round. Currently, year-round employers cannot use that worker visa program, known as the mm-hmm. H-2A temporary agricultural program used by seasonal employers. It also mm-hmm. satisfies some goals for labor rights advocates by providing a pathway to legalization for workers who show a dedicated history of farm work.
Yeah.
But Senate negotiators writing the bill are stuck on a little-known provision centered on those H-2A workers, where they should be allowed to sue their employers if they believe labor laws have been broken.
The obvious answer is yes, they should be.
Yeah, the provision's biggest foe is the American Farm Bureau Federation.
That does not surprise me.
Yeah, often known for its more conservative stances, has long been the agriculture lobbying giant in Washington. And it received large GOP support in the House, where it passed twice. And members are anxious for their Senate counterparts to finally finish writing and introduce a bill. The split within the GOP over agriculture labor reform, led by Farm Bureau influence, threatens the prospect of a final deal as time runs out.
Mm.
And so, yeah, Republicans on the Hill are accusing each other of not understanding the urgency of the bill or even what it could do. So, yeah, lots of typical bullshit as the GOP is finally, you know, willing to do something fairly progressive here.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them still want to take that money.
Yeah, some of them just cannot get out of their own fucking way.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're actually going to move away from the United States into world news. And the first story is, due to climate change, more or less, the United Kingdom has been dealing with an intense heat wave this past week. They had their heat go up to what at that point was, I believe, the highest recorded temperatures in their history, which I think is like 96 degrees.
Let's see. The UK Met Office registered a provisional reading of 40.2 degrees Celsius or 104.4 degrees Fahrenheit.
Ooh, okay, more than that.
At Heathrow Airport, breaking the record set just an hour earlier.
Yeah.
Before Tuesday, the highest temperature recorded in Britain was 38.7 degrees Celsius or 101.7 Fahrenheit, a record set in 2019.
Yeah. Here's the thing you got to remember. The UK, typically, most of the year is damp. And kind of rainy. It's not always necessarily cold, but it's usually damp and, you know, a little rainy. their housing, and this is one of those things where, you know, how a house is insulated is important here, because they typically don't get really high temperatures like this, even during the summer, the housing in the UK typically is not built to absorb, you know, cool air or to keep out the heat. Their housing is usually built to absorb heat, which is making a bad situation even worse for a lot of these people. And a bunch of people have already died from heat stroke. Climate change is here, folks. Okay?
Yeah.
It's here. There's a fucking heat dome over the middle of the country right now in the United States. All right?
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. Heat domes aren't necessarily something that is unusual in the United States, but the intensity and the size of them have grown exponentially over the last 20 years.
Yeah, and this kind of heat storm in the UK is something that's like a 100 to 300 year event for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's even more powerful than when they got 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And so much so, you know, many businesses shut down.
Yeah.
Like literally roads and airport tarmacs and all that were melting because they're not built for this kind of heat.
Yeah, I know the trains had to slow down to a crawl because they were afraid of all the rails buckling from the sheer heat. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the British Museum, which has a glass-roofed atrium, mm-hmm. shut its doors early.
Yeah.
Their Supreme Court closed to visitors after a problem with the air conditioning forced it to move hearings online.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, many public buildings, including hospitals, don't even have air conditioning.
Yep.
Sign of, you know, how often they have to deal with this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think I saw a stat somewhere that was like 5% of the UK has air conditioning for their houses. Compared to like 90% here in the US,
mm-hmm.
you know, where we have actual deserts and such to deal with.
Yeah.
And many of the places that do have air conditioning are more for like a single room.
Mm-hmm.
For that versus like central air kind mm-hmm. of stuff. So yeah, I think they had some fire stuff there as well happening mm-hmm. as a result. And yeah, it's a thing that should wake people up.
Yeah.
Climate change has been here for, you know, a long time.
Yeah. And it's finally starting to actually affect people and affect their way of life.
Yeah, when it affects white people, things will get done.
Yeah. And, you know, again, like, you know, here in the South where I live, you know, it's, you know, like it getting to 100 degrees is not an unusual thing during the summer. But
I bet the amount of times you have it per year has increased since when
yeah,
you were
it actually
a child.
Has. Yeah, it has. To a certain degree, it definitely has. It being like 100, having a high of 100 and over for like a solid week is definitely something that is not something that happened when I was a kid, but definitely happened this summer. But yeah. Next, we got a little story about here. So Sesame Place, that is the company behind the Sesame Street franchise, apologized after a video shows that young little black girls were being passed over by a parade character.
Yeah, this was, it's Sesame Place, Philadelphia. Where there's a video showing, you know, a parade happening. I believe the story of this is that the two black girls and their parents,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's their mom or not, but probably their mom that took them to the park and all this, and they were sort of on their way out, and they saw the parade was happening, so they wanted to mm-hmm. see, you know, one of the characters that was walking by them. You can watch the video and see the character kind of walking around, you know, high-fiving kids,
mm-hmm.
hugging them, whatever. And the girls are very much, like, you know, excited. They want to hug them, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the character kind of just, like, shakes his hand at him, like, yeah, not today, kind of thing. But then
mm-hmm.
goes to hug the next person, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it's like, yeah, it seems like if it's not racist, it's very much shitty.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that, yeah, let's see. Sesame Place put out an initial apology about this.
Mm-hmm.
And have since put out another one, basically saying, like, yeah, we sincerely apologize to family for their experience in our park on Saturday. We know that it's not okay. We're taking actions to do better. We are committed to making this right. We'll conduct training for our employees so that they better understand, recognize, and deliver an inclusive, equitable, and entertaining experience for our guests.
Mm-hmm.
For 40 years, Sesame Place has worked to uphold the values of respect, inclusion, and belonging. We are committed to doing a better job making children and families feel special, seen, and included when they come to our parks.
Mm.
And yeah, that's good to see.
Yep.
I definitely have to train some of these people much better.
Oh, yeah.
Because, Sesame Street was, you know, why their whole set is like that? It's designed for, like, a black neighborhood.
An urban neighborhood, yes.
Yeah. That's literally what Sesame Street is aimed at.
Yeah.
From the beginning.
Yep, always has been. And now for a bit of science news that is frankly kind of distressing. Monarch butterflies are now listed as an endangered species.
Yeah. By the International Union for Conservation of Nature.
Yeah.
Added the migrating monarch butterfly for the first time to its red list of threatened species and categorized it as endangered.
Mm-hmm.
2 steps from extinct. The group estimates that the population of monarch butterflies in North America has declined between 22 and 72% over the years, or over the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Depending on the measurement and method. Let's see. What we're worried about is the rate of decline.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to imagine how very quickly this butterfly could become even more imperiled.
Mm-hmm.
And this person who's not directly involved in the listing estimates that the population of monarch butterflies he studied in the eastern United States has declined between 85 and 95% since the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, North America, millions of monarch butterflies undertake the longest migration of any insect species known to science.
Yeah.
They winter in the mountains of central Mexico, migrate to the north,
mm-hmm.
breeding multiple generations along the way for thousands of miles. The offspring to reach southern Canada, then begin the trip back to Mexico at the end of the summer.
Yeah.
It's a spectacle that is very popular for nature people.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Just awful. Yeah, so now for a little bit of an example of worker solidarity and shows, hey, this shit actually works. There was a theater in Minneapolis that was going to have Dave Chappelle do a stand-up show there, and obviously, everybody kind of knows that Dave Chappelle is kind of a turf asshole. And a lot of folks just do not care to help facilitate that shit. And so a bunch of the workers at this theater decided, you know what? If you're going to have this guy come here, we're not going to fucking show up. And it got so bad that it actually ended up canceled. And now he has to move to another theater.
Yep. Yeah, this was at First Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
The iconic venue that provided the setting for Prince's Purple Rain.
Mm-hmm.
This is also considered a safe space for queer folk
mm-hmm.
in the community in Minneapolis.
Yep.
So it was very much like, oh, you're going to have this guy here?
Mm-hmm.
I think that had a lot of the community very mad.
Oh, yeah.
As well as staff, you know, threatening to call off that night if they were to continue holding it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they canceled it hours ahead of time as they, you know, kind of came to their senses, put out a statement apologizing for scheduling this.
Mm-hmm.
He's still going to hold his show at Varsity Theater
mm-hmm.
in Dinkytown.
Yep.
That'll be, the show on Wednesday as well as the last 2 days, 21st and 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so that is... good news.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is not his First Amendment rights being taken away. This is called the free market.
Yep. Yes, it is. And so goes to show you, worker solidarity, it does have an effect. But next up, this next one was like fucking sudden, just out of nowhere today. Vince McMahon today announced that he is retiring from the WWE. And the first time I saw this, I was like, oh, God, what the hell did he do?
Yep. This is the continuation of the investigation, which must mean that it was not going well for him to just outright retire.
Yeah.
Yeah, he put out a statement saying, as I approach 77 years old, I feel it's time for me to retire as chairman and CEO of WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the years, it's been a privilege to help WWE bring you joy, inspire you, thrill you, surprise you, and always entertain you, and blah, 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 about family and all that shit. I was like, you're only leaving because you feel like shit's going to come out.
Yeah.
And really ruin your carny-ass reputation.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Vince McMahon is a pretty vile human being even on a good day. But
yeah,
he must have found something so bad that he knew it was going to cost him the job. And keep in mind,
forced out.
Yeah, he was going to be forced out, possibly even arrested. Keep in mind, this is a dude who has, you know, already got a bad reputation for treating his talent very terribly. There's a reason why a bunch of them either left for WCW or went off to start their own wrestling leagues, like AWE, you know. He also, like, helped facilitate dudes, like, sexually harassing his talent. And just in general, his economic practices are just really awful. He's just a shitty person. And apparently, even with all that, it looks like they may have managed to find something that finally would have been bad enough to just to fucking nail his ass to the wall. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's had harassment and abuse issues since the 80s. He's just been able to pay to keep him quiet, but now that's not a thing that you can do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
WWE wants to be taken seriously as a real company.
Mm-hmm.
And that means they can't just, you know, brush the stuff aside anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, his daughter Stephanie and WWE President Nick Khan will be co-CEOs, replacing him fully.
Good.
Let's see. And yeah, Triple H will be resuming his role as, I think, executive vice president of their talent relations, which he had stepped aside at a certain point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Good riddance to him.
Yeah. Yeah. And looking forward to the weeks and months ahead to find out what it is that finally did him in. Because it must have been bad. Like, somebody must have been killed. or something close to it. But anyway, now we're on to, as it's probably obvious, the entertainment portion of the show. And first off, we got a story from Netflix. Some of y'all probably know recently that Netflix is now, like, going hard against people who share their passwords with others.
Yeah.
And as you can probably guess, that did not go over well with a lot of its users. They've lost like 950,000 users in the last quarter. So right now, they're testing a new password sharing subscription add-on in 5 Latin American countries.
Yeah, so you can essentially like add a home for access to your account. Mm-hmm. So you would initially start with your base subscription fee. Yeah, they have here 219 pesos per month per home in Argentina for additional. $299 per month per home in the Dominican Republic, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
Customers on the basic plan can add one extra home. Those with the standard plans can do 2 extra homes, and premium tier subs can purchase up to 3 extra, which is sort of a weird thing to do to make it also a tiered thing. But yeah, let's see here. Yeah, that's kind of it. Not really surprising they would try to go this route. I don't know if it's going to really work super well, but probably anybody they can convert over to it is a win for them, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. And now on to some other entertainment news. We got a couple of stories from Disney+. The R-rated Deadpool and Logan Moten movies have both been added to Disney Plus this week.
Yeah, Deadpool, Deadpool 2, and Logan have been added as of July 22nd today. Okay. Ratcheting up the number of R-rated movies and such that are on there. I think Moon Knight is another one that was one that prompted them to add sort of a parental control feature to the service. So yeah, that'll be good to see.
Yeah. So, and speaking of movies being added, Lightyear will be coming to Disney Plus on August 3rd.
Yep. A couple weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
And the newest Pixar movie.
Mm-hmm.
That launched in June 17th.
Yep.
As sort of a prequel to the Toy Story films.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense of just following the character one of the toys is based on.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to being able to watch that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it'll probably make more money there than it did when it was in theaters. Yeah. And now we got a bunch of trailers for you. First, we got an update. Some updates on the Marvel animated shows for Disney Plus, including an announcement that X-Men 97 will be coming out fall 2023.
Yeah, so let's see here. There's Spider-Man Freshman Year.
Mm-hmm.
That will, let's see, follow the early days of Peter Parker learning to become the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Mm.
That'll be happening, let's see here. Wait, they had a time frame for that. I think it's next year for that one. But yeah, they mentioned that they've already renewed it for a second season.
Mm-hmm.
Early 2024 freshman year will be out. Sophomore year will be the follow-up. Mm-hmm. That's already been approved.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Features, his various classmates. No MJ, Gwen, or Ned from the live-action movies. Have bad guys such as Unicorn, Chameleon, Scorpion, Speed Demon, Tarantula, Rhino, Butane, and Doc Ock.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Charlie Cox will return to voice Daredevil, and Doctor Strange will be around to help out Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And Norman Osborn will be a mentor for Peter. Some interesting stuff there. They talk about What If Season 2 will arrive early 2023. And showed off some stuff from that. Captain Carter is back with Black Widow and Steve Rogers in his season one Iron Man armor.
Hmm.
They'll be featuring episodes taking place in 1602. Episode where Shang-Chi fights Odin, other Asgardians, and some other stuff here. So that'll be happening early next year.
Hmm.
They also mentioned, let's see, Marvel Zombies, which I think is going to be R-rated.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go full on with that.
Oh, yeah.
So they've shown, a number of the zombie superheroes that'll be in there, as well as the humans.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be around, so you can check that out. And, yeah, they also talked a bit about X-Men 97, which continues on from the original animated show.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be out fall 2023 with a second season already confirmed. And so, yeah, that's a big deal.
Mm. Yeah. So
they go after the nostalgia for that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that old cartoon, as far as, adaptation go for that era, that original was really good.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're actually, more or less bringing it back and, continuing the original series, definitely cool.
Yeah.
I used to fucking love that shit when I was a kid.
Yeah, it seems like they are going to also rearrange the episode order for the original X-Men animated series for it to be in the intended order for watching.
Yeah, because as was very common with stuff that Fox used to do, episode order was not typically something they adhere to. I mean, look at what they ended up doing to Firefly.
Yeah.
And yeah, their animated stuff suffered a lot of the same shit.
Yeah, they mentioned Jean Grey's Dark Phoenix saga was out of order in the original run.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yep.
And the Bo DeMaio, who wrote Netflix's animated The Witcher spinoff, Nightmare of the Wolf, is the head writer on X-Men 97.
Awesome.
And so, yeah, that'll be happening next year.
All right. Sounds good. Let's see. What else? Next up, we got a trailer for House of the Dragon, which, of course, is the Game of Thrones spinoff. And I'm not gonna lie, doesn't look half bad.
Yeah. Yeah, they did say some weird stuff around this show.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find it real quick. So I think they basically seem to suggest that they are going easy on the sex stuff for this. And that they are... Yeah, they're pulling back on the amount of sex, but will depict sexual violence inherent in its Middle Ages-inspired world. We don't shy away from it. If anything, we're going to shine a light on that aspect. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't be downplayed or glorified. Which is like, when has that ever held you back before?
Yeah.
Because Game of Thrones was either consensual sex or rape.
Yeah.
Anytime that was going on, they loved to have the sexual violence.
Yeah.
But this is also in a fantasy world.
Yeah.
It's like, they don't have to adhere, especially when, yeah, there's a... Some responded to this, it is so fucking transparent to claim sexual violence is for historical accuracy while pairing it with a photo of costumes about as true to the time period as the spirit of Halloween.
Yeah.
And another one saying, this sucks. Realistically depict diarrhea instead. Someone else being like, yeah, it's so realistic. All the women have no hair on their legs.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, yeah. We also got another freight. Trailer for The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power.
Which features a look at the human form that Sauron is in.
Yeah.
Which people have been noting looks like Eminem cosplay.
So, weird thing is, we do actually have kind of vaguely the idea of what Sauron, like, according to Tolkien, would actually look like. He did, like, a rather, admittedly kind of vague, like, watercolor sketch of what Sauron in his mind looked like. Didn't really look like this.
Yeah. But also, he's a shapeshifter.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't really matter what one image says.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, like any other video you see on this show, there's lots of people quoting random... J.R.R. Tolkien quotes.
Yeah.
To try to say this is a bad show.
Yeah.
Because there are not just white people in it.
Yeah. Which, first of all, is kind of bullshit because Tolkien himself never really went in deep on what the actual, like, ethnic makeup of a lot of his characters was. And also, I'm pretty sure a lot of these dipshits are neo-Nazis and... Anybody who knows anything about Tolkien knows that he really hated neo-Nazis in general. He famously wrote a response to a letter from Nazi Germany that was getting ready to do a German translation of The Hobbit. And when they asked, what his background was, he said, "If I am to assume that you think that I am Jewish, then I regret to say I have no relation to that gifted people," which I love to put. And post and shit like this because it drives them fucking crazy. But yeah. So far, the actual trailer doesn't look half bad.
Yeah.
So, they're just being little dipshits because, they're nerds and...
Yeah, they're Tolkien nerds. Which is the worst kind of nerd out there.
No, I'd say Star Wars are even worse. But...
Yeah, but I'd say these people... read a book long ago and think that is, everything that every future thing should be beholden to 100%. And it's like, that's going to change and evolve, especially in representing you know, more races of people.
Yeah.
Than the movies did.
Mm-hmm. And finally, last thing for the night, we got a trailer for Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves.
Yeah, which looks pretty good.
It does not look half bad at all. We'll see what type of thing it is they're going for here. It definitely looks good. It looks like it's pretty faithful as far as like the idea of Dungeons and Dragons.
And it's got some big names to it as well. Chris mm-hmm. Pine, Hugh Grant, Michelle Williams in there, or mm-hmm. not Michelle Rodriguez,
mm-hmm.
Who plays I forget, like a barbarian sort of character. I forgot the sort of class. I'm not super well versed in D&D stuff. But Chris Pine's character is a bard, so he gets mm-hmm. made fun of a lot. So, yeah, you also get to see what is it, an owl bear?
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically yep. an owl that's the size of a bear.
Uh huh.
That fucks shit up. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks. Yep. Yes, we do. We have ourselves a show. So, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got a link for it in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, Archive, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. So we're going to wrap it up there. As always, our thoughts are with the people of Ukraine and Russia. We hope a equitable peace can be reached very soon. Also, even though, you know, we are more or less on the other side of the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, some cases are rising in more urban areas. So if you have not been vaccinated yet against COVID-19, we strongly recommend that you do, encourage you to. And if you have been vaccinated but feel like, maybe I could get a booster or something, you feel like, man, that's something I want to do, don't hesitate. They're very easy to get a hold of right now. You can probably just go to, you know, a local pharmacy or somewhere, and they almost certainly will have it in stock for you. So, yeah, we're going to end it there. Join us next week where we will almost surely have a much more bullshit to talk about once again. But until then, everybody, good night. See you next week. Later.